Hello and welcome to episode... Oh, let me see if I'm rolling. Oh, I'm rolling now. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, hold on a second. I'm just going to blow my nose here, Alan. All right, I'm good.
Hello and welcome to episode 152 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany, and with me as always is...
Adam in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
And with us as sometimes is...
Is Don in Barrie, Ontario.
Barrie?
Yeah.
You know what? If I would have gone with Guelph. I thought it was Guelph.
Well, you haven't been listening.
Adam said... Adam thought it was Etobicoke.
Do you pronounce the K in Etobicoke?
You do.
That was Etobicoke.
If you pronounce the K, then you are not from this area.
Oh darn!
Oh no!
Really didn't want to out myself as not being from Etobicoke.
Just alienated all our Etobicoke listeners.
Yeah, sure. Sorry, Etobicoans. Yeah. So what's going on, everybody? What's going on? Well, Don. Start with you. Who's the guest?
Hello.
What's going on with you, man?
Well, a few sleepless nights recently when I've been getting my book reprinted. It's winter time, so the snowflakes are falling, and I'm out taking pictures of that. I've got a bunch of corporate clients keeping me busy in whatever free time I would have otherwise had. Yeah, lots of stuff. Just constantly churning out new images, and it's a lot of fun.
So you said reprinted. Last week we spoke, you were getting geared up for the printing, or it was in the near future anyways. And so you had the book printed, and what's with the reprint?
So there was some issues with the first production run of the book, and it kind of sucks when you see the book and the pages had little ripples in them. And it bothered me, and it bothered a lot of the people that were going to be receiving the book. So I talked to the printing company. And they said, well, that's normal. And I didn't really think that would be normal. But technically it was based on the printing method that was used. It's basically moisture damage. When they add a lot of ink to the pages, it's on the press. It's on the paper's coming off of a roll under tension through all the different colors, cyan, magenta, yellow, and black, but not necessarily in that order. And then it goes through a heater. It dries in like a second or two. And so in that process of adding all the ink and then drying it, it can ripple the pages if there's a lot of ink going on. Now, a lot of things get printed this way, catalogs and cooking books and textbooks. And it just so happened that my pages were so ink heavy that this rippling became a problem. And so I talked to them about reprinting the book on a different press, completely different technology, and they agreed to it. But I had to go and sit through the entire 36-hour press time and sign off on the pages as they were coming off the press. So that was about a 10-hour drive there and 10 hours back and 36 hours on press. It was a long week.
You sound like a rock star, Don.
Yeah. I wish.
So,
I'm really happy with the way that it looks, and we're recording this on November 30th here, mm-hmm. and the books are scheduled to arrive in 2 days. So I'm excited.
Okay. Well, we'll stay on the line until they show up.
All right.
So, did they not anticipate this problem? Like when they look at your proofs that you sent in, or like your pages that you sent in, they should be able to have a look and say, "Wow, this is going to be a lot of ink."
And I would have thought that. And so that's why they were willing to eat the cost of the first production run. And I only paid the cost of the difference. So they were willing to own up to it. And they were great about that. They in the pre-press process, they found so many little tiny things. Like they recommended a scuff-free laminate for the cover. They told me that the cover has part of it is glossy where the snowflakes are. And I had that wrapping around the spine. And they said, you shouldn't do that because there's a potential that it might crack when it gets wrapped around the spine. And, this bleed on this one page is 1/16 of an inch, not far enough, and et cetera, et cetera. They gave me, pretty much every possible point that could cause an issue with the book. And I was thrilled. I fixed everything, except for this one big issue that kind of ruined everything.
It sounds like it must have just slipped past them, though, because it sounds very professional on the rest of it.
Oh, yeah. I guess it's one of those things that they don't see it very often. There's not many pages that are that ink heavy that would cause this issue. So it's not on their checklist.
And is it because of the black backgrounds of your images?
It's because of the black backgrounds and all my snowflakes.
Okay. Now, is this, where did you get it printed? What city?
Beauceville, Quebec, okay. Which is about 45 minutes outside of Quebec City. And it's being printed at one of the facilities owned by Transcontinental. And that's the biggest printing company in Canada. And they do a great job. I'm really happy with the professionalism and the customer service and the results, if it wasn't for that one simple problem. So now everything will be great. And it's actually printed on a slightly thicker paper stock now as well. So the book will look bigger, even though it isn't.
Great, but it sounds like once they realized it and they worked together with you to make it happen, it sounds like a good experience.
A long experience, a stressful one, one that I wouldn't care to repeat, but all's well that ends well.
But the alternative would have been, let's say you'd shipped it off to a much cheaper printer that would be outsourced in China somewhere. You never would have caught this. All your books would have come back, the end.
True. However... printing in China probably would have cost me half as much.
That's what I'm saying. But half as much for a product that you can't sell is rather expensive.
That's right. At this point, I've got the first production run of books that I don't feel comfortable selling, but I wouldn't feel so bad giving away as long as it won't cannibalize sales. So I've been thinking about donating them to public libraries and school libraries and the like.
How many do you have?
The print run is 3,000.
So you have 3,000 books. I would be hesitant. I'm not going to give you advice on the air necessarily, Adam.
No, you're giving them advice right now. That's
you want me to?
Yeah, go ahead. For it, man. Yeah.
Burn them. Your name is on it on a subpar product. Your name is your brand.
And I thought about that as well, but I just the printing facility offered to just scrap them into the recycle heap, and I've been thinking about that as well, and I've been on the fence, but I wouldn't mind. They do flatten out over time, and the ripples do kind of subside, and it's for something that's going to be manhandled and dog-eared and what have you, that's going to end up in a library. I don't know. It's not going to look so great after a few people have torn through it anyhow. So I wouldn't mind giving at least some of them away to libraries that wouldn't otherwise have a copy of the book. So I think that's the game plan. But only the better copies, because some have more ripples than others. So the best of the first production will still have some use.
Okay. Adam, your call.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I probably would side with Don in terms of giving a few to places like libraries, because I agree in that it's still some exposure, even though your name is on them. They are people that probably otherwise might not be seeing it. So you certainly are going to expose them. I think there's probably it's probably less subpar than you think. I think when it comes to our own work, and obviously I'm not looking at the product, but I think it's probably one of those things that after it sits in the library for 6 months, nobody would know the difference between the actual copy you're going to sell and the copy that's sitting in the library.
Or, here's another option I'm going to suggest to you, and I'm not even joking on this one. Take 1,000 of them. It's going to be a lot of effort, though, but it doesn't sound like you're allergic to work, Don. Take 1,000 of them, wrap them up in Christmas-type wrapping with a note on them, and just leave them all around the Toronto metro area. And have people...
Well, there's an idea. Mm-hmm. That could work.
And just don't explain it, and people will just, wow, there you go. I'm sure you'll get a lot of bomb-sniffing dogs working on it.
Yeah, I think some explanation would be necessary. Otherwise, I'd be arrested.
Yeah.
I would like a systematic trial. If you take, let's say, 15 or 20 of the reprints and 15 or 20 of the originals and somehow mark them or have someone mark them with some kind of logo and then store them for 6 months and then go back and see if you can figure out which one or what. Is there any... Oh, I guess you said the paper stock is thicker.
Yeah, and the spine is thicker. It'd be an immediate
tough. It'd be tough. Yeah, okay. All right. So scrap that. Forget I was speaking.
So maybe you can't wrap them. Maybe you just kind of put a note on them and leave them on like on the subway and stuff like that all around town. And I'll bet you that'd be, I'll bet you get in the newspaper even. And that's what we all wanted to do is get in the newspaper.
Well, yeah, because who reads the newspaper these days?
Yeah. If those who reads free snowflake books on the subway?
Yeah.
Same people. Yeah. So just remember, Don, there's no traffic jam on that extra mile.
Well, there isn't. And so it's all free and clear from here.
I read that on your blog post.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Skip Cohen told that to me, actually, and that was kind of a nice little conversation I had with him about the whole customer service is king thing.
Uh-huh.
And so I wanted to make sure that everybody was as happy with the book as they could be, and so we're getting there.
Great. Well, look forward to it. It's very exciting. Two more days. Two more sleeps.
Exactly. And then not a lot of sleep for a few days as I package up and ship out the rest.
Right. Now, people who have not ordered one and wish to buy one, do they buy one from you directly?
Well, it's best to buy it from me directly, mm-hmm. Simply because I get 100% of the profit at that point. Right. And you can get that from skycrystals.ca.
Okay.
And so the order form, and it's an online process, and I'll ship one out to you. However, I am working on getting the book listed on Amazon. They've got a purchase order in, and so as soon as the new books come in, I'll have it listed on Amazon, and hopefully some 5-star reviews and some fanfare can make it rise in the ranks and get some free publicity there. Amazon takes a pretty big percentage, right. and so I wouldn't want to sell a lot of books there, but it's a great way to get exposure. And so for those that don't know, anybody that's putting stuff on Amazon through the they call it the Amazon Advantage program, when they're selling stuff, Amazon takes 55% of the sticker price, and whoever's selling it only gets 45%. I'll still make a profit at that, but quite a bit less. So
right.
I'd recommend if you want a copy of the book, get it from me personally.
And then we get no cut, but that's okay, Don.
Yeah.
you did a lot more work on the book than Adam and I did.
That's right.
Like 50% more, probably.
55.
Yeah, maybe about that.
55. Great. So listen, you know what yesterday was?
No.
Yes, you do. Black Friday.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We actually went out shopping.
Good. I've never been on a Black Friday experience. Did you go in Canada?
Yeah, and it wasn't really that exciting. Everybody was just trying to have sales that mimicked the U.S., I guess the fever pitch of stampeding through Walmarts.
So no stabbings over waffle irons, though?
No, it just looked the same as any other day, except the sales were okay.
Adam, have you ever been to a Black Friday sale?
Not in the U.S., but like Don, I've been to the stores in Canada. They've only really been doing it here for the last couple of years, but mm-hmm. it seems like every year, I think the Canadian retailers are just trying to keep the money at home instead of going cross-border.
So what are your thoughts on the whole Black Friday idea?
Retailers need the excuse to have, one day where they all kind of band together and get the crowds out to sell things. And to be honest, there's a bunch of lost leaders and a bunch of things that they're still making profit on. It's a very profitable day for all the retail people. I don't see any downside aside from the tramplings and the stabbings. But what do you think, Alan?
The downside I see is that if you're able to move units and still make a profit at that low price, why are you selling it for the much higher price? I don't like to see things fluctuate like that.
That's a good point.
I don't mind a small fluctuation between like certain different stores. Like if you can go buy something at an iPad at the Apple store, and it's maybe it's 5% cheaper at one of your big box sort of Future Shop, Best Buy places. That I understand.
I think that they only make profit at the prices that they would sell at if there's enough volume. And so they need the rush of crowds coming in to buy things on that one particular day in order to make it successful for them. And they can't pull that trick every single day. So
right.
I think that there is a bit of strategic planning involved. I mean, when I look at my book, each copy of it costs me $11 and I sell it for $45. And so I can take a significant hit on the price and still make a profit. But I mean, what is, like, if I were to be selling it for $15, it's not worth my while or the investment or the risk or the overhead in order for me to produce the book. And it's worth more. So, you know, in order for the project to be a success, in order for a retailer to be able to pay their employees and all the management staff and everybody up and all the people working in the warehouse and all the people that ship the product, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, they need to, on an everyday basis, make a little bit more money. Now, they make more than they need, of course. You know, there's very rich CEOs and investors in most of these companies. But I still think that they've got the game figured out.
So that leads us kind of leads us into the next thing I want to talk about. Did you guys read about the whole Spike Lee Old Boy poster?
Yeah, that was depressing.
In what way?
Well, I mean, nobody really wins at the end of that. But why don't you give an explanation on what's going on there?
Well, basically, the broad strokes are Spike Lee has a new movie coming out called Old Boy, a remake of a Korean movie, I think. And I guess I'm not sure which company, like the ad company, I'm not sure who was the perpetrator on this, basically contracted an artist to work up some comps of some potential movie posters. And they basically said, hey, you know, of course we have no budget, you know, we can only pay you peanuts, but, you know, don't worry, if we pick yours, you know, we'll definitely more than make up for it. That's the way it was portrayed. It was an open letter that this guy wrote. And
You know, when somebody writes an open letter, that's their last straw. They have no other recourse.
Oh, but that's the thing is, I can identify with this guy. I mean, I've never worked with Spike Lee, but I've worked with many people like like he's had the experience with this ad agency or whoever it is. I'm not sure who the company is. He didn't name the company. That's what I found that interesting. Anyways, they basically said, you know, if we'll make up the difference if we choose your posters, and you'll get more than compensated. And so they chose his work and they loved it, and then made him an extremely low ball offer.
Like, as if he was working for $1 an hour or something even worse. I mean, it was because he put he said 2 months into it.
Yeah, it's like that takes a lot of effort. Despite the fact, I mean, it's one of those things that creatively, when you look at a final product and you think, wow, you know, I could do that. Like for me, it's fairly easy to mimic things. But when you have to start from scratch and design something from scratch, it takes an awfully long time to get there.
Especially, it's not just when it's designing something from scratch. It's designing something from scratch to somebody else's creative vision. And I think the divide there means that you have to go through constant revisions and constant communication, trying out a bunch of different ideas to see what somebody else prefers.
And they never tell you what they want.
Well, I mean, they might give you some ideas, and then you do exactly that, and they come back and say, well, that's all wrong. and I've been there.
I've been there many times where they basically tell you, okay, no, not this.
Exactly.
Okay, well, give me a hint of what it is that you want. Just a hint in the right direction, and I will run that way. And you end up running laps. So he's done a lot of work on this, and basically they make him an offer that he said was less than his a day's pay as an assistant. For a photo assistant, so whatever that means, not very much money.
Yeah, and I kudos to him for saying no to that.
Absolutely. Well, because what did they come back with? They came back with, you'll get a lot of exposure.
Oh God, don't ever accept that as a valid payment.
Now wait. Wait a second. I'm sure you have.
Well,
I have, and I've been burned. I've learned this lesson the hard way, and it pretty much once. I've learned it. It takes one good kick in the stomach to realize, okay, that was a horrible error.
And I've done that. But to be honest, too, you know, if National Geographic were to come to me and say, hey, we want to put your photo on a cover, but by the way, we're not going to pay you. We're just going to give you exposure. Mm-hmm. You know, I still might say yes. And there's a few exceptions to that rule. But there wouldn't be any exposure from something like that. Your name isn't going to be plastered all over the movie poster saying, hey, you know, so-and-so did this.
Yes.
Go and see his work, not the movie. Screw the movie. Look at this movie poster guy. There is no exposure. And there's no future work. If there's more work coming, which they promised him, oh, well, there's promise of future work. Why would you want to work more for this company? They're paying you so little.
Well, I've had that exact experience. Where I worked for a pretty decent sized movie production company, they produced a feature film, and I shot the behind the scenes and made a documentary about the making of the movie for very little money, on the idea that it would be exposure. Like I had not this many years ago, I had not worked in the industry in that respect before, and I thought this would be great. I mean, and the producer, he produces a lot of movies every year, and they're lower budget, so it's no one you've heard of. But I thought, well, this would be great. What a great business to get into, you know. And this is at the time when behind the scenes stuff on DVD was starting to really become popular. And so I did the first one, and then he called me back for the next movie. He was excited, and he said, "Yeah, great, same deal, like almost no money." And I hung up on him. I said, "You gotta be joking me, you know." And I guarantee you, these guys, the producers or the ad agency, they didn't pay for their Porsche with exposure.
Exactly.
You know, my kid.
You can't pay the rent on good intentions.
My kid. Yeah, I'm not all about the money, but the grocery store is, and the bank is as well. They seem to care, and my daughter likes to eat actual food. So now, to be fair, it doesn't sound like Spike Lee was involved in this knowingly, anyways, because I think he did post some of the. They didn't use the images. Proper, and then all of a sudden, I guess they showed up on Spike Lee's Facebook page or whatever it was. The actual images did, and it sounds like it was unknowing. I gotta assume that there's no way Spike Lee would do this on purpose.
Well, I would imagine that he's not his social media people, but that shouldn't be an excuse. I guess the story concludes that he was being offered peanuts and refused the peanuts. And then they allowed him to post the posters on his own personal portfolio.
Right.
At which point they were discovered and picked up by, news agencies or what have you. And they ended up making the round on a bunch of blogs and were taken without permission. So the agency that originally contracted him to do all of these posters was just furious. And he said, well, you know what? I'll take them off my portfolio. They were taken without my permission. I can't be responsible for people stealing things. And then fast forward a little while, I'm not sure exactly how much time, and now that agency is using his posters with a copyright notice on the bottom saying that they own the copyright to them. Hmm. And of course, the original artist of the posters has not seen a penny.
Well, that sounds excellent. Well, hopefully Spike Lee weighs in on this soon. I'm sure he will. He seems like the kind of guy, just despite the whole tweeting that guy's address incident, he seems like the guy, you know, he'd do the right thing. So I can't believe I didn't even mean to say that. Do the right thing. That was actually a complete accident.
Well, there you go.
There you go. What are you gonna, maybe he'll Jungle Fever or one of his other movies. This week's photo challenge, Adam, you issued it.
Mm-hmm. What it's right in with what we were talking about. It was a movie poster.
You know what? That's funny how that dovetails nicely, and you hadn't even anticipated that, unless you were just anticipating this guy writing an open letter.
No, I wasn't.
Whew. Okay.
Maybe you went looking for movie poster stories.
No, this was basically I don't have much time to look for anything, and this one fell into my lap because one of the few people I follow on the Twitter is David Hobby, and he tweeted this.
Oh, okay.
So I basically read that. That's about the only thing I read this week.
Great. Well, we don't feel sorry for you. So
I'm not looking for sympathy, buddy.
Yeah.
No. I understand. I don't mind. I'm not allergic to working hard, Chief.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Yeah.
So you cool it. Do you ever have to give people massage for exposure?
I'm not even going to answer.
Do you rub their calves and they're like, oh man, I'm going to tell all my friends and you'll be rich by the end of the week.
No, that's not how it works. They pay for services, and I don't.
But you know that is a fair comparison too, because photography. I mean, and doing the artistic stuff, you don't have any material expense. Your expense is your time and your effort and your skill. A lot of people I've heard say, "Oh well, you can't walk into a restaurant and have a wonderful meal and say, well, can I pay you an exposure?" Because it's costing the restaurant more than just their time and effort. It's costing them material goods and everything, and so it's not a fair comparison. But I like what you did there, Alan, and I might use that one.
Wonderful. Run with it.
All right.
Actually, Spike Lee wants to use it, too. So. let's get into the posters. So, Adam, you pick who goes first, buddy. It's your challenge.
Let's go with our guest. Isn't that the way you're supposed to do it?
I think so. All right. All right, Snowflake Man.
So, being the snowflake season and everything.
We'll start, Don. We'll start with yours. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll start talking about it, whether we like it or not.
Oh, okay. Well,
I like it.
So I don't even get to describe it first?
Do you want
it? No, I think you can describe
it.
All
right, go ahead. Sorry.
It's me standing at the edge of my driveway, looking off into a field of white snow in silhouette.
Uh-huh. Yep. Like I said, we'll start. And I like it. I like it. This looks like a real poster. It like looks like you're, you know, like you, well, like you'd be able to sell the movie like this. Now it would be quirky and confusing. The New York Times, Manola Dargis, or whoever does the movie reviews for her for them, it would be quirky. But I like what you've done. I like the font. I like the photo itself. I like how the snow goes off into whiteness.
And that's not cropped at all. That's adjusted and everything, because the road was technically behind me, and I had to pull that out and just push it to white. It wasn't cropped at all. I figured the framing was. I knew exactly where I wanted to have the space for the text, and how I wanted everything to fit. And
I'll give you my one critique. This is the only critique I have. But if this were a movie poster for the masses. First glance, nobody would know what you're holding in your right hand.
And like, this would not be a movie. This would not be a movie specifically for the masses, period.
No. But I'm just saying, and even forget the masses, I think a lot of photographers might not know looking at this, unless they knew you specifically. They might not know just because of where the positioning of the camera, and I'm guessing that's the ring light. Is that a ring light that's kind of dangling there? I knowing a fair bit about photography, still my first glance was I was trying to figure out exactly what that was. I mean, I knew it was your camera, but you can see where I'm going. There's nothing in there that necessarily says that this is that this would be a photography related subject matter. I mean, we're on a photography podcast, but just again, only thing is I even looked in first and I was trying to figure out what the silhouette was on that side. I know the mitten, of course, that's your move. But that's my only critique. I love the text. And is that a Scarface kind of Don Comerica? Is that what I'm picking up? That's kind of
the font you're talking about, Adam?
No, just how he did the black and white on the. Oh. Isn't that?
It is very Scarface.
The reverse. Yeah,
I wasn't even thinking of that. That's cool.
Yeah, that is very Scarface. I like it. I like the photo. The camera. I do pick it up. Maybe it's. Because I'm a huge nerd, I don't even think of it like that. It reminds me of the cameras they use for like close-ups and for like in the morgue for crime scenes. So if you've seen pictures, you know, like the Silence of the Lambs or something like that, you always have the lab tech guy, and so this kind of has a little hint of that. So this could be the cover of one of those rogue cop books that everybody seems to like to read. Like that, and I like how it, where the dividing line is with the road, and it goes off into white. Now, is that actually just blown out snow, or did you paint that white?
So the snow is blown out right around where my shins are, and where you can see the where it starts, and then as it continues to go beyond, you've got part of the neighbor's driveway and the road and some houses and things into the background. So I just took what was originally the snow and I extended that all the way to make it nice and clean.
Nice. No, this could be like very Coen Brothers, but...
I like the extra detail, too, in terms of the Two Hosers production and all the credits.
Yes.
Well, I, I wanted to. It's not a movie poster without that, right?
Yeah, we both mailed it in, I think, on that.
I made a choice not to. I've done movie posters, and fake ones in the past, and I usually add those, and I could have just dragged them in, but I decided to go a different route. Also, to kind of make Adam feel a little bit better about himself, and because I knew you hadn't done it.
I did mine last night, right before I went to sleep to get up to do this podcast.
So. As did I.
Yeah.
That is how it goes, but my two critiques is one, and this one is forget it. Like this one's really minor, and I know you wouldn't have done this had you taken the picture of somebody else. The camera would be nicer if it was separated from your leg.
Yep,
a little bit. Now that's when you're on the timer. Good luck. is that what you did? Just the 10 second timer?
I could have, but my fiance was there because she was my stand-in, so that I could get the framing right. And then I jumped in and told her to press the button.
Gotcha.
But she's not a photographer when it comes to positioning and that kind of stuff. So
gotcha. Nice. No, it looks good. And the other critique is, how many fonts have you used on this poster?
Three. If you include the bottom text.
Uh-huh. Three is too many. Not for you, but I'm telling you, moving forward from a design aspect, two fonts max. These are for listeners, two fonts max when doing things. That's
my. And so I had two fonts. I had Times New Roman and Nyala, I think, are the two fonts in the entire poster. Except when I was doing the bottom stuff, I realized that there is a specific font for that. And so I picked one up.
There you go. Okay. Adam, yours?
Yes. Sure.
Let's do Death Chop.
All right.
This, you know what I noticed about him? He's a small child, but you know what? Big attitude.
Yeah, really big.
So how'd you shoot this?
This is green screen. That was what I said I was going to do last time. So I did, and we had friends over last night, and I thought, great, I haven't done a photo challenge. This way I can include someone that isn't part of my immediate family. Mm-hmm. So kids were having a bit of a play date, and it was a little bit of a gong show making this happen, because there was four children, and of course, just picking one to do something specific like this meant I had to endure a whole bunch of everyone having their turn. So oh my gosh, to get this, again, everyone has to have about an equal turn, so I don't want to do this for very long. So I think I took about four pictures of each kid doing something. So I had the intention of making this some kind of martial arts or fight pose, and this friend of ours, he is extremely lean and very muscular for a 7-year-old. So he was all about, okay, I'm going to show my muscles. So we thought that we'd do something in the way of a pose where he was doing a punch or a karate type move. Mm-hmm. And this is what we came up with. And as soon as he kind of opened the mouth and threw the arm out in front, I thought, yep, done. So we got that. And then I just had to figure out what I was going to call it, and thought of the sillier the better. So I went with Death Chop, and the font I chose just kind of scrolling through and just looking for something that seemed Death Chop-ish.
Mm-hmm. And that's sort of a stencil look.
Yeah, and then I just basically I looked at martial arts movies as a theme, and there's a wanted sort of a gradient background that wouldn't be too distracting, that would sort of fit in with the light that I used, which was just the one softbox. That's all I've got there. Mm-hmm. And then chose the red gradient, because red seems to go with a lot of martial arts films. So there you have it.
And some letters capitalized, some not.
Yeah, that was one of those for the second line, or for the Death Chop. Yeah, I just found it stood out better than when it was all the same.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. But how did you choose which letters?
Just by playing around. That's it. Just kind of mixed it around, and that's what I liked.
Okay. Don, what do you think?
I think it's cool. I can see that there's a bit of color around the hair from the green screen that hasn't been pulled out properly, though.
Oh, yeah. This was my 30-second version.
Yeah.
As if there's going to be a 60-second version.
Yeah.
I know that there's tools in Photoshop to do that. I think the Refine Edge tool works well for that, but I don't play around with green screen too much. The only other thing is, it doesn't really tell a story. A movie poster is supposed to give at least a taste of a movie very, very quickly, and I guess you get a bit of that. But I'm just thinking, in the background, out of focus, wouldn't it be cool to have like a plush toy, like a stuffed animal that's like ripped in two or something, that sort of puts something into context and adds a bit more silliness to it.
But again, I like your idea. Yeah, I like your idea. Okay. In a perfect world, I would have probably done a few more details. I agree.
We'll wait 30 more seconds. You can throw that in there.
Yeah. I just got to rip apart one of Jack's toys.
So this is good, but this is straight to video, this one.
Yeah.
Don's, I'm going to see Don's in the Cineplex.
Right.
But this one, yeah. This one I might get about 10 minutes in on Netflix and then shut her down. See if something else is on.
Well, at least you give it a chance, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, the font definitely grabs you. And the fact that, did you have the kid do push-ups just before the shot?
The funny thing is, he actually was doing push-ups.
Was he really?
Yeah, he really was. He was actually doing burpees. And it's amazing. It's amazing how fast and how well a seven-year-old can do burpees.
Did I ever tell you the time I was at the pool in Vegas? I forget which pool it was. Hard Rock, whatever, the Hard Rock Hotel. They have that giant pool nightclub, day club thing.
Yeah.
Or whatever. We're going in there, and I'm behind this, the most enormous individual I've ever seen in person. Like, this guy did, I can't believe he wasn't in the weight room right then, because he must never leave. It's just massive, tall, just chiseled, complete muscle guy. Where the guy waves us in, okay, go on in. Before he goes into the pool, he just takes a quick left turn behind some of the cabanas and busts off 10 quick push-ups, and then sort of struts into the pool.
Nice.
Yeah, I mocked him. I sure didn't. He was a big, big man. But I thought it was pretty funny, just him busting off push-ups. So, all right, let's have a quick look at mine. Now, I thought we were doing real movies. When you said last week, Adam, that was going to be a real movie, so I sort of did a reimagining of an actual film.
Okay.
So there you go. Have you ever seen Hardcore Logo?
No.
What?
No.
I wanted to pick a Canadian movie, too.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I've heard of it.
Well, yeah, you're going to want to go and check it out then.
I haven't heard of this. I thought that was just silly. You were using a logo for a movie. And
nope. Yeah. Hardcore Logo. Check it out. It gets compared to Spinal Tap a little too much because it's not a comedy, but it's a mockumentary about a band, and they're called Hardcore Logo, a punk band from Vancouver. And it's a great movie.
So your poster is less ironic than I thought.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep. I guess I'm sort of, you know, a little egotistical in imagining myself as Callum Keith Rennie, but, you know, hey, haven't we all done that at one time or the other?
Sure.
No?
Great. No.
Not fans of him?
Tell us about the background.
Forget the foreground. Yeah, first of all, I took this with one light, just a hard light, off to camera left on a timer. And I decided to really go hog wild with the effect, and I doubled up on the ProMist filters this week. Because I bought a 1/8 black ProMist, and I fired that on with my quarter black ProMist as well, and just stacked them up. And sort of really lowered the contrast, added that grain to it. And then I crinkled the background. That's it.
What kind of background are you using here? This is just a white background paper.
That's all Adam cares about is what brand of paper specifically?
Yeah, this is a Savage paper.
This is my white wall. This is just shot in my living room. That's it.
So how did you make it look like that?
That's a future episode. That's next week's episode, Adam. I'm not going to give away all the secrets on that till next week. I'm saving that one on how to do that effect, because this is an effect that I use quite often. And I'm going to do that. So this is just simply, I took the photographs off my wall and snapped it against there. This is about the third one that I took. I took three quick ones, and that's it.
And see, Don, before you laugh, I was going there because I know he doesn't have a background set or paper drop. So I knew there had to be something more to it. So take that sort of snide remark back.
Hey.
No, I'm happy with it. I'm looking at your poster here, and aside from not having a proper background, as Adam has just pointed out, I think that you know, it tells that message about sort of what's going on in the image. You've got the whole outline of what can possibly happen within that. The things are balanced. And the little bit of color in the logo and in the writing, I think, brings your attention to sort of what's going to happen.
Well, thanks. I like yourself, I thought about it ahead of time where the font was going to go. I had the design in my head before I took the photo. So I left enough white space for that to happen. For that to sort of match up and balance out and all the things you just said. And I want to point out one little detail in case you missed it. Not only am I wearing sunglasses, I have a pair around on my shirt there.
Oh, I see that now.
Because Rockstar's, he would. I'll tell you right now, Billy Talent always has a second pair of sunglasses.
Then you shouldn't have been wearing a black shirt.
I wanted to wear the black shirt. That was part of it, because Billy Talent also wears black shirts, I'm sure. Probably white, too. I don't know.
Well, then you should have gotten white sunglasses.
Good point. Good call. Good call. It's very subtle. You have to really look for it. But by the way, if you haven't seen the movie, there is a band called Billy Talent.
I know that.
They are named after the guitar player in the movie Hardcore Logo.
Oh, cool.
His name is Billy Talent. The lead singer is, I think, named after Adam. His name is Joe Dick.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah, it's a true story. Well, the actual name is a true story. The rest is not. Right. But so anyway, to our listeners out there, I picked this movie because if you haven't seen it or heard of it, you should check it out. It's I guarantee you've not seen anything like it. It's a great movie.
The only other thing about yours, too, Alan, now that I'm spending some time looking at it, is the last line of text at the top where it says one last shot is a little bit close to your head. And and I think that a little bit more distance or space there would have been good, because I find myself drawn to exactly that point where there's very little space there, because there's some high contrast edges, and I don't know if that's the most important part to be looking at. So
I agree. I agree. On the other hand, though, my ceiling is there, so you know. Sort of hit the wall on how high I could go, because I used every millimeter I could to get up there. So, but you are correct.
Is that Four Guys, Five Nights? Is that text like straight off of a movie poster for that, or is that your own doing?
That's the only thing I changed was I changed gallons of gas to liters of gas.
Oh, I see. Okay,
left the miles, didn't change it to KMs for whatever reason. But that is the exact tagline from the movie.
Okay, and I didn't know if you were just getting really
from
creative.
Gallons to liters.
No. It was actually 764 gallons, but I thought 2,800 whatever. It didn't look right, so I just meant liters. You know, I want to bring a little of Canadian back into it. It is a Canadian movie, so I don't really know why.
Well, you didn't go with kilometers. Yeah.
Yeah. No KMs, because KMs. I mean, that sounds like a 4,800 kilometers. That sounds weird.
Yeah.
So there is that, and it really is a film by Bruce McDonald. So, all right, this week's topic. Winter. It's winter. Winter's coming.
Is it technically winter yet?
No, 3 weeks.
No, December 31st. 21st.
21st okay. This year. Yep. Jeez, Adam, you didn't know that?
No, I don't calendar watch.
Right, that's right. I will bet, though, do you have a Christmas tree up in your house yet?
No.
Tomorrow?
December 1st, whenever that is. Is that tomorrow?
That happens to be tomorrow, yeah.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, and tomorrow. Usually December 1st, especially if it falls on a weekend, because then we have a little more time. But yeah, December 1st is when stuff goes up at our house.
Okay, deck one. When does it go up at your house, Don?
Whenever we get around to it, usually about 2 weeks before Christmas is sort of the time frame, but there's no set date.
But your wife's European, right?
Yep.
Okay. Now, because they like we do it here, it goes up Christmas Eve.
Well, and so it probably will happen closer and closer to that. I mean, there's the big celebration is just around those days, and then it comes down almost immediately afterwards.
Right.
But we're probably going to have a smaller tree this year. We don't really have the space for one, so it's not going to be as big of an ordeal to set it up and tear it down, so it might happen earlier.
There you go. So anyway, point being is winter's coming. The weather's already kind of changed. So we wanted to give out a couple of tips on winter photography. What to do in the wintertime. How is it, you know, because it's obviously a little bit different than shooting in the summer, obviously. And so, Adam, let's start with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What sort of challenges? What do you face with in the winter? What's a tip for winter shooting?
My tip will be batteries. Have lots of them. Potentially a spare camera battery is always a good thing to have, especially if you're out for a reasonable chunk of time. And other batteries, flash batteries, because in the cold, especially those that go into the real cold, the minus 10 or greater, the battery life that you get is far worse in cold temperatures. So having some fresh batteries, preferably kept in a warm place. So rather than keep them in the car, where it's also going to be very cold, have them in a pocket that's close to your body so that they can stay warm, and you'll get better life out of those batteries.
Why is that? Why is the cold? And I'm not really asking you, Adam. I'm asking Don.
I don't know the science.
Yeah. I bet you Don knows the science.
I did some research into why batteries do this a long time ago, and I can't really remember all the specifics. But the chemicals... And different batteries, like different technologies of batteries, will be affected by this to different degrees. Lithium batteries are affected the least, but it still is a big issue. If you were to take an alkaline battery and take that outside and leave it, you know, minus 20 degrees and try to use it in something, any battery meter will read it as dead, even though there's no load on it. So I think it's just the chemicals that are involved in producing the electricity. As they get colder, they become less active. You know, the molecules are moving around less, and so that they can create less of a chemical interaction. And if they eventually freeze, then there can be no interaction. So,
wow, yeah. I was just kidding, man. You really knew that.
I try.
Awesome. No, impressed.
I when he started talking, I was going to say, of course he knows, but then I was too late, so I said it now.
No, that is very interesting. And that's, I remember the first time that happened to me when I was out shooting and thought, wow, like that, like I hadn't really anticipated it. And so, you know, normally, let's say you were getting 3 hours out of your battery for whatever I was shooting, and all of a sudden you're getting 20 minutes, you know, because it actually can be that drastic. And so, Adam's right. Keep it somewhere warm. Keep it in your armpit if you have to. That's a move. That's a
do
move.
You have do you have an extra battery for your Mark II?
Do I?
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you have one, or do you have more than one extra?
I only have one extra for that, because I find that most times, that most places I shoot, I'm able to bring a charger with me almost all the time. And so generally I find that the battery technology is at the point now, even if it is cold, not too cold, but if it's cold, a little bit cold, the next battery will charge as fast as I deplete the one I'm using.
I have a question for you, Don, because you shoot a fair amount around snow. Is there a difference between battery life having used two in the camera with the battery grip versus one and then changing them out?
I don't know, because I've never done that. Because when I was using a 5D Mark II, I had a special battery grip that had a Wi-Fi thing in it and connecting to GPS and what have you, and it had its own battery for its own electronics, but I've never had sort of two running in tandem to find the difference. That being said, my 1DX uses a much bigger battery, and so in that case I find that it lasts a lot longer, but it could just be the nature of the bigger battery. So
could be. So there you go. I do find that my 5D Classic eats batteries much faster than my Mark II.
Well, it's a different battery too, right? It's a different model of the battery.
Right, but it's the same one that goes in my 40D, and it eats them much, much faster than my 40D does. Now, I know there's other things going on, sensor size and all that, but it is very, very, it's a real energy hog compared.
Right.
So, Don, you know what? Let's end with you, because your tip's going to be the winner. I'm pre-calling it. My tip is in the winter is pay attention to white balance. White balance is a killer in the winter now, because of, you know, the way the Earth tilts on its axis, and now sunlight's coming at a different angle. Is that a thing? That sounds like science, right? Right, Don?
No.
What?
The sun will be at the same angle regardless. I mean, it's more likely in the wintertime to be at a lower angle, sure, but that same angle persists at other times of the year as well.
I think you're full of nonsense, Don. I'm going to go with mine. Right. Do you not find that the color temperature to be more blue in general? Maybe it's just maybe it's blue for longer.
I think that has more to do with the fact that the winter, you're more likely to have overcast skies than you will in the summer. And light filtering through the clouds is going to be cooler than direct sunlight. And the snow is it reflects light very brightly and very whitely compared to the more earthy tones, you know, like grass and what have you will have some warmth to it. And if you don't have that, then the snow will make things look cooler as well.
So we can all agree that it looks more blue in the winter, though.
I will agree, but not to the reason that you suggested.
That was like pulling teeth, Don. Jesus.
I know.
My whole point was you're going to get blue light. That's what's going to end up happening. Everything's going to be a lot cooler tones. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it's the kind of thing that sometimes I like to basically run with those cool tones. You know, we talked about this a long time ago with the blue and the orange and how these colors compete and what do they mean. And so I don't mind. However, I find that in certain situations, your camera's auto white balance might not give you the best results in the wintertime because it might still be a bit of a blue shift and maybe you want your skin tones to be bang on. If you're shooting the 6D like Adam, it's probably going to be fine. The cameras are pretty good. However, not every single time is going to render how you want it. So what I find is I tend to try to shoot on a warmer white balance on purpose to sort of compensate for the sun coming at a lower angle or the grass. Whatever Don said is probably more accurate, but I try to compensate for that by warming up my white balance a little bit when I shoot. And then when
In post-processing, would you recommend doing it just in post, like if you're shooting raw and fixing it then, or in the camera?
I suggest I do shoot raw, and I do try to get it right in the camera. I do my best to get it right, but if you're shooting raw, it's much easier, but it's very easy to adjust that later on as well if you need to.
Right.
So in that situation, I do like to have a shoot a gray card as a reference to be able to warm that up and have a just have something for the computer to recognize as perfect gray. Now, we've talked about the gray card in the past, so listen back if you want to find out how to shoot with the gray card. So when you go to shoot your snowflake stuff, what do you do for white balance?
It's set to auto because I end up doing some pretty massive adjustments to color and things. Sometimes I'll add a little bit of a blue tone to it in post-processing, right in Lightroom. And then sometimes depending, again, in Photoshop, because I want it not to be like gray. I want it to be subtly and very subtly, almost like a slate blue kind of color.
Mm-hmm.
And so that takes a bit of adjustment, sort of fine tuning the exact colors when I've got them on my computer screen. So I just shoot auto. When I've got that setting dialed in, I then copy and paste those settings across the entire board so that every image of that same snowflake has the same white balance and the same settings. That kind of stuff. So
I find myself every now and then shooting auto white balance, even though it just kind of goes against everything that I've, you know, how I basically started shooting. I never used auto white balance ever. I guess when film days, I guess I did, but you know, even then I would filter. I would have filters for that, but it's this kind of thing is you never really thought about auto white balance. But it does a pretty good job, and if you can change it later, it's, you know, give it a try sometimes.
And the light is coming almost exclusively from my flash. So setting it to auto and then firing a flash is, I think the camera will automatically then choose the balance that the flash has.
Right.
And so while it's set to automatic, I guess it really isn't if the flash is firing.
That's interesting. So I didn't design the flash. I don't know how it works. If it knows, if it's a dedicated Canon flash, does it know, hey, look, it's going to be 5,700 degrees Kelvin and just automatically set it for that? I'm interested. I'm interested to find out, Don, is maybe compare, not while we're on the air, of course, but compare a couple of white balance, automatic white balanced shots from different settings, and just see if they have the exact same Kelvin reading.
Exactly.
I'm interested.
Yeah, well, I'll run out and do that right now.
Appreciate that. Put that in your next book. another tip for us then, Don. I had something else to say, and then it didn't come out. I'm not even going to bother editing that either. So, Don, what's your tip for winter shooting?
Well,
I remember mine now. I remember mine now.
Fine. Then yes. Tell me.
Maybe you don't always want it warm. Maybe you do want it blue. So, did I say that already, Adam?
I think you did. Something along those lines. Yeah.
It was a test. This was a test to see if you're still awake. And you're
feeling
it, buddy. Yeah. Don't be afraid to make it a little bit blue because it hints at the season. Okay, Don, fire away, please.
Well, if you look in like the specifications for most cameras, the manufacturers say that the operating temperatures are like from 0 to 40 degrees Celsius. So they don't actually recommend that you use the camera in the cold. And there's a couple of reasons why. In extreme cold, you run into some issues where, and we're talking like minus 30 and colder, where some of the internal mechanisms might freeze up. The lubricant that controls the mirror can seize and freeze. And so there's issues if you go into the very, very cold. You have to take special care of your camera. Mm-hmm. But in the regular scenarios, if you take your camera outside into the cold and then bring it back inside without anything protecting it, condensation will form all around the camera. And if the camera itself isn't weather sealed in any way, then that can cause some havoc where you'll have moisture basically surrounding the camera and the lens and in all the seams because the camera was colder than the air inside. And then,
even if it is weather sealed, do you want to risk it?
I wouldn't, because who knows, like, if there's if your camera's weather sealed, like my flash, my macro flash is not weather sealed, neither is my macro lens. So even though my camera body is, I still wouldn't want to risk it.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing to do is if you're out and you've got your camera bag with you, and you're going inside and you know you're not going to take your camera out of the bag, it might be fine in there. But if you're coming in, just make sure you take the memory card out of the camera first so you don't have to open up your camera bag until everything inside acclimatizes to the new temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the cards, you can go and get to your editing and take a look at your pictures.
I've also heard that is very hard on the cards as well, but I don't really care at the price they are.
Yeah, well, you buy a good card, you know, like a SanDisk Extreme or whatever the equivalent Lexar cards are. They're pretty robust, and I've seen people pull cards out of the the salty ocean waters that have been there for 6 months, and they still read. So,
yeah.
And well, of course, the camera would definitely not survive that. So, I think the cards can survive a bit more. But if you don't have your camera bag with you, or you want to be a bit more cautious, just get a Ziploc bag and stick your camera in that. And so it's almost like when you take a new goldfish home from the pet store and you stick him in the tank, he stays in his own little bag for a little while until the temperatures equalize. And so if you take your camera inside and it's in that bag, all the condensation will form on the outside of the bag and not on the camera. Then when the camera's warmed up to room temperature, you can take it out and there's no problem.
I would also recommend on that note, take a bunch of Ziploc bags and leave them on your front porch. Because you're going to go out and shoot something quickly and forget to bring a bag. And then you have to do this big dance where you do, I leave my camera out there, run and get bags, come back out. Leave a couple just sitting under your porch mat or something like that in case you forget. Because you're going to forget. Adam, do you ever forget?
I do sometimes forget, and I think that's a great tip. In your mailbox, even better. Then they're not getting super filthy under your mat.
Blam. There you go. You can put them in another Ziploc bag.
That's true.
That's the move I would do.
Yeah.
So that's good tip. Good tip, Don.
And thanks for adding on to it.
That's how I do it. It's yes and over here at Two Hosers. That's how we do it.
Do you have a goldfish, Don?
I don't. But when I was little, growing up, one of our pets was an aquarium full of fish. And so I remembered that analogy.
Oh, my goldfish is weather sealed. So I just, it rode home in the glove compartment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Wonderful. Don. Where can people find out links to all your wonderful stuff?
Well, you can find links to everything from doncom.ca. It's donkom.ca. But I'm most active online on Google Plus. The link is there.
Oh, are you active on Google Plus, Don? Are you?
I am.
What are you at? 1.4 million?
Close to it. Close to it.
Now, Adam thinks a lot of those are robots, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I have more robots than you do.
you have more robots than I.
We don't have any robots.
Yeah. Don, you took that really personally. I was just joking about the robots thing.
No. Yeah. I mean, it's great. I've got a robot army. I can have fun with that.
You could, yeah. So, yeah, you're up to 1.4 million. I think we're at 1.4 on the nose.
There you go.
1.4 people even. And that's because Adam doesn't. Anyways, I don't know. I got nothing.
I post a lot on there and I get a lot of feedback on my work and I love to interact with people. It's a great place for a photographer to be as far as a community goes. I find that that's probably the best place for me to put my social media efforts. And so it's all sort of bundled up into, I've put all my eggs in one basket, let's say.
Ah, so it's a two-way street. I get it. That's why we're not doing very well.
Yeah, yeah.
We're really, Adam and I are just kind of one-weighing it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you can treat it as a broadcast medium, but unless you interact with people and you have conversations, I don't know if it's going to work for you.
I guess our tagline was, "Hey, everybody, like us." That didn't fly.
Yeah. Well, let's keep trying.
Yeah, I'm going to double down on it. Yeah. Great. Well, check it. We'll check you out there. And if you haven't bought the book, buy the book. It's that simple.
Yeah, and you can get that at skycrystals.ca.
Check it out, Adam. Where can people find your stuff?
Two Hosers Facebook page and schwartzchronicles.com.
Wonderful. Check out mine at alnatridge.com and the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find all the links. And we'll put a link up to Don's stuff there as well. So, oh, sorry, Adam, challenge for next week.
Go ahead. But not headshot. Anything but headshot.
No, we're going to do the effect I did on the background.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
You going to fill me in on that?
Oh, should I fill you in ahead of time?
Or I can just crinkle up my paper.
Okay. You know what? It's an analog effect. That's next week's challenge is analog effect. And we'll talk about how to do that on the show next week. So that's it. Oh, remember, buy a bunch of stuff on Amazon. Isn't Cyber Monday? That's a thing, right? That's today. Not today, but when this is airing, it's today.
Yeah. So buy it all on Amazon.
Does Cyber Monday, does that include Amazon?
I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. So maybe that's a thing. Cyber Monday. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you're doing Cyber Monday on Amazon, check out the link on Two Hosers and click through there, and then we'll all get rich and buy Don's book. So there it is. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.